session number 19391, Reel 1.
Henry Jones, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Hoylake.
Which year was this?
1919.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Hoylake?
Yes, I was born here and lived here right up to the war years.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that was in 1933?
That's right, yes.
What did you do on leaving school?
I came from a fishing family and involved in local fishing, and I went to, really as a order boy. Fishing wasn't very good then, and I went back to fishing and joined the Naval Reserves and got called up at the outbreak of the war.
Why wasn't fishing very good then?
Well, it seemed to be overfished in the area, and the Hoylake was silting up very, very badly. And the boats were going from the big smacks to smaller boats, and a lot of the fishermen did find it very hard fishing.
You mean they couldn't catch the fish?
Well, the fish was going further offshore, and things were very hard then. A lot of the fishermen had to get local jobs, such as council work and any repair works, and give up fishing altogether.
But once they got the fish, could they sell the fish all right?
Oh yes, the fish went to Liverpool on wagons and such like, occasionally to Fleetwood, but there just wasn't the fish as there used to be.
What kind of fish were they catching?
Well, most of the fish was plaice and ray, and a few sold.
Which brought the best price?
Soles was definitely the best price fish, and it is today, a long time afterwards.
What kind of nets did you use to catch them?
All trawl nets. That's beam trawl. In the winter months, we used to go after shrimps. And when April came, we'd turn back to the plaice fishing.
What's the difference between beam trawl and other types of trawl?
Well, in those days, the local boats used to work a beam trawl. And as fishing came more modernised, we went to otter gear, which was more efficient.
Is beam trawl over the side?
Yes, alongside the boat line. You know, otter gear, you on the modern boats, you drop it over the stern of the boat line.
Because I come from Hull, the type of trawlers I used to know used to have the trawl from the stern, I think.
Well, they're the most modern boats over the stern. Hull used to be similar type of fishing as this area, but as things have progressed, it's nearly all stern fishing now.
And how were the shrimps caught in the winter?
The shrimps caught with a beam, very small mesh net, very similar way of fishing, but with a much smaller net, mesh in the net, so they couldn't get out like, you know.
How far did you go out to catch?
We'd go out about up to 15 miles off the shore. These boats we fished in was only up to about 40 foot long, you know.
So would you just go out for a few hours?
We'd go out early morning and come back either late in the evening.
Why didn't you fish at night?
Well, we did fish at night for soles. They were the better fish for night fishing. But we'd not got in those days. You've got to remember, I'm going back now 65, 70 years now. And in that time, things have modernised a lot. We hadn't got electricity aboard anything then. I can remember fishing even just after the war, where our lights was only a candle in a jam jar. It has changed a lot.
So you mean it would have been dangerous to go out at night?
Oh yes, it would be.
Would boats get lost in those days?
Oh, quite common, yes. Yes, I can remember quite a few cases where boats and the crews were lost, either being rammed by other bigger ships or such like.
What kind of ships would ram them?
Well, you'd get, Liverpool was a very big modern port, you know, and ships would be coming down the Mersey and the Rock Channel. And I can remember quite a few.
What's the Rock Channel?
The Rock Channel is the one that used to run mainly from New Brighton, passing Hoylake and going out towards the North Wales coast, where the Mersey itself, as we know it today, is the Queen's Channel and the Crosby Channel, and that goes past the Mersey Bar.
Doesn't the Rock Channel exist today?
It's silted up very, very badly, and it's very, very... only small boats use it today, like, you know.
Why is there so much silting?
Well, this is quite common on the west coast of England and North Wales. It's silted up fantastically. In the last 150 years, from what I can hear, it has silted up. It's unrecognisable now. When I was a young boy, the water used to be in at the entrance to Hoylake all the time. Now, it only comes into Hoylake on very big spring tides. Only last week, it blew very hard here, and there were low tides, and if you'd looked on the promenade at Hoylake, you'd have thought it was the Sahara Desert. That's no exaggeration. It was just one mass of blowing sand. No sign of any water.
Well, what's the cause of all this at bottom?
Well, the prevailing winds in this area is westerly. And unfortunately, Hoylake is at the end of the westerly winds where the sandbanks, and it just piles the sand up into Hoylake, you see. Hoylake in the Mersey. We've got big dredges working into the Mersey where we haven't here, so you've got nothing here. You know.
So what's the future for fishing in this area?
In this area, it's finished.
When did it finish?
Well, I reckon it finished profitably about 20 years ago. And now it's just the people who are born and bred in it still trying to do it part-time, really.
So, you said you joined the Naval Reserve.
I joined the Naval Volunteer Reserves in the end of 1938, I think it was.
Why did you join the RNVR?
Well, a few of the local lads who were doing it, and it seemed to be a thing in those days to something to do, and better yourself, get learn something, and we joined it. We went down to HMS Irwell in Birkenhead, the training ship, and got our training there, and used to go twice a week in the evenings, and we stayed there till the war broke out. We got called up just when the war broke out.
So you say you did it to get instruction?
Instructions.
What did you learn? What did you learn?
Oh, we learned. Well, we started off with gun drill and squad drill, and most of the younger lads of my generation were born on boats almost, so we knew the elements of it, things like that, but we didn't know the finer arts of it, navigation, anything like that. We just knew our way around with a compass and a lead line. It opened our eyes a lot. And we're very young, and you've got to remember when you were just 18, you were still a young boy. We'd never been outside the district.
Was there any money involved for you in joining the RNVR?
I think we did get a retainer. I just don't know what it is. It was only for the full 12 months. It was only a matter of pounds. I think we got 2 shillings a night for going down. I just do honestly forget.
Was that much of an inducement?
Not really.
Did you join out of patriotic reasons?
Yes, that had something to do with it, because it was obvious that something was going to happen. and we thought we'd be better learning before it did come. A lot of the local lads didn't join at all, like, but it must have been about half a dozen of us of the same generation joined, like, you know.
So, did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes. I was in a fishing boat just off here when, actually, it was on a Sunday morning about 11 o'clock.
How did you feel about that?
Well, we were very, should we say, excited about it. We thought we'd be getting called up any day, and I think we got called up two or three days later.
Did you feel any sense of dismay?
Well, we're very excited about it. I wouldn't say dismay-like, you know, because we didn't really realise what was going to happen.
Did the war affect you at first?
When you say affect me, it was obvious that we're all excited about it, and we just didn't know what was going to happen, to be honest. We were excited we would see the world and things like that, but not to the extent that we did see it in the end.
Were you in any bombing by the German Air Force?
Not right at the beginning. I went abroad almost straight away, you see. I got called up. Done a couple of days on HMS Irwell in Birkenhead, very preliminary training. Then we got sent down to Devonport, and straight away we went learning gun drill and squad drill and PTI, all this sort of thing. And then within a matter of a week or so, we suddenly were ordered onto a train in Devonport Dockyard, and we went to Southampton. We joined the Athlone Castle and went out to South Africa.
Is this in 1939?
This was in September 39. Very lucky for me at the time, I did get a draft kit a day or two before I joined the Athlone Castle to go to the HMS Rawalpindi. And I certainly wouldn't have been here now if the draft hadn't been changed, because she was lost. And almost on a first sailing, I think.
So you're in the Athlone Castle. Who were you with?
Well, there was about 500 troops then, as the Welsh Fusiliers. They were landed at Gibraltar. We called it Gibraltar on the way out. And then at Freetown, the west coast Africa port, Accra, Takoradi, and so on. By this time, we were enjoying it quite good. The food was very good on the, she was a big troop ship, but she was a passenger liner, really. Then we went from there to St. Helena, which was something we'd never ever thought we'd ever see, like. And then we landed at Cape Town about 3 weeks afterwards, I think.
Why, if you got a draft ship to the Rawalpindi, why didn't you go to it?
Well, three of us stopped. No, we were ordered into the gymnasium at Devonport, and we didn't know what was going on. Then they said the following ratings joined HMS Bulola, we were supposed to go to at South Africa, Cape Town, but even that was changed afterwards. We just get orders to do something, and you don't know what you're doing, like, you know.
So the change in the draft had nothing to do with you?
Nothing to do with us, no.
So what happened to you at Cape Town?
Well, when we got to Cape Town, the HMS Bulolo, which I was supposed to join, she hadn't arrived in from Australia. So we'd done training at General Bothard at Simonstown.
What's General Botha?
That was the RMVR training ship at Simonstown. Like, we'd gone to Cape Town, then we were sent by train to Simonstown, which was the naval base.
So was it HMS?
HMS General Bother, that was what it was called.
What was it like?
I don't think it was HMS, I think it was HM, is South African. It was South Africa, you see.
His Majesty's South African
ship. South African ship, it would be, yeah.
HMS, yes.
Yeah, it wasn't a republic then.
What was it like at General Botha?
Well, we lived at a little holiday camp called Froggy Pond, it was called, at Simonstown, and we went into General Botha every day by lorry from this holiday camp, it was called, to General Botha and done the training there. And then they asked, I got changed again then from then to HMS Comorin. That was another ship, and our merchant cruisers, these are. HMS Birola was a liner, but she had all guns and everything on her. And I don't know what her refit was taking such a long time. They sent so many of us to HMS Cormorant, which was in Cape Town. And I stayed on her till she was lost. And,
HMS Cormorant was an actual ship, was it?
Oh, yeah. She was a P&O liner, but she'd been made into an armed merchant cruiser, AMC, they used to call them,
So the first ship the first warship that you actually joined
was HMS Cormorant.
HMS Cormorant.
This would be in about October, November 1939.
Whilst you were at Simonstown, there wasn't a famous dog there, was there?
A dog? There was a famous dog, yeah.
When you were there?
I didn't remember seeing it, yeah, but I had no sort of connections with it. Yeah, we'd seen, I remember that. You're only reminding me of it now, but I remember this dog. Yeah.
What do you remember about it?
Nothing, virtually. he used to just be walking around, and all the matlows used to make a fuss of it, but I honestly can't remember much.
Was it a small dog or a big dog?
No, it was a big dog. I think, if I remember right, it was like retriever type dub. It's no good, I'm only guessing it. I can't remember.
What kind of impression did HMS Cormorant make on you when you got involved?
Well, it was a very pussy ship, if you get the meaning of it. She was very... We had a captain who had an active service foreign captain. Captain Hallett, his name was. He'd been retired and came. They brought him back, all his retired foreign skippers. I got the job as a messenger on this ship. I'd done nothing else but run around passing messages around. That was my first job when I joined it.
What's a very posse ship?
Very.
What do you mean by a very posse ship?
Well, very, very strict. You know, it was, if you've got on some ships, they were fairly easy going. But this was a real, and you've got to remember, this is the Navy. It was pre-war Navy, if you get what I mean. We had a lot of active service ratings, and only a few RMVR as the war continued. There was very few active service ratings, if you get what I mean, blokes who were in before the war. And there was the RMVR who, I won't say the backbone of it, but he took a lot more important jobs as the war continued.
So were you running messages for the captain?
Oh, no. I was on the bridge all the time, and signals would come through to go aft and things like that. You've got to remember that you'd not got the intercom, we couldn't, things had to be passed almost by messenger.
You mean you'd be given a piece of paper?
You'd be given a message on a proper signal pad, and you'd have to run after it, Everything came from the control, the bridge, or underneath the bridge was the signal room and all this sort of thing, like, you know.
And who would you take the piece of paper to?
Well, you'd have another officer who's in charge of another part of the ship, you see. And it would go to him. You might even go to the engine room, anything like, you know.
And were you told to get it, the message there in a particular length of time?
Well, you'd get sort of first priority, or you could weigh the position up, like, you know. It was first priority, second priority, and third, you know, things like that. Some you could just walk after with it. It might only be to the galley or anywhere, like, you know.
You mean if it was third priority, you could just stroll?
More or less, like, you wouldn't just hang around. You'd have to always be walking very smart and all that, like, you know. You couldn't just amble around at any time, like, you know.
And if it was first priority?
If you were in a hurry, you had to run. Why, that was quite common, that, like, you know. Till you got to an officer, and then you had to just sort of salute him. And our merchant cruise was much different than a pucker naval ship. There was tons of room in them, you see, like, you know. It was like a peanut liner, she was, like, you know. She did have all the cabins knocked out as the war continued when we went to Durban. They put big concrete ballast in the boat, like, you know, and big rocks and 40-gallon drums to keep it afloat, thousands of these sort of things, like, you know.
Were you comfortable aboard the ship?
Oh, yes. There's plenty of room on the Cumberland.
What would you sleep in?
Hammocks, sleeping in hammocks, like, you know.
Had you slept in hammocks before?
Yes, in the barracks in Devonport we slept in. They're all hammocks there, like, you know.
Were you happy sleeping in the hammock?
We got used to them. We didn't take much notice of them afterwards. You got used to everything. We'll come to something else afterwards, which you could always sleep anywhere in the Navy afterwards. Sleep in the water if you could.
What was food like aboard the ship?
Very good. The AMCs were very good. Because they had, you've got to remember, they had big cold rooms and refrigerators. But couldn't complain about that. And we were a lot of time in the tropics, you see, or Cape Town for the first 12 months of the war, working out of Cape Town and Durban and those places, you know, and coming up to Freetown, convoys.
So what kind of duties was Cormorant carrying out when you
were... she was really she was the marshalling ship of the convoys, if you say. We'd come up from the Cape with perhaps 30, 40 ships. She would be in the centre of the convoy. She had really a marshalling with the Admiral aboard, if you like.
You had the Admiral aboard?
No, we had Admirals occasionally, but not all the time. She was the leader of the convoy, if you...
Which admirals do you remember being about?
We had one called Admiral Sykes, remember.
How did he behave?
Well, I mean, in a ship like that, you're not in contact with them as much as... I always remember, I'm sure it was Admiral Sykes now, I was in Simonstown and I went on the Devonshire for a short while, only for 48 hours. They wanted to do a shorter cruise, most of the crews were on leave. And a German ship had been sighted off the Cape of Good Hope by the South African Air Force. And they wanted some crews to go on the Devonshire or the Dorsetshire. And we got commanded to go on it. And when we got alongside this Watussa, it was called.
The what?
The Watussa. That was the name of this German ship. And apparently the crew and the officers had opened the valves and seacocks on the ship to scuttle her. and it left a lot of the passengers who was aboard to try and trying to run the blockade back to Germany, you see. And they'd gone in the lifeboats. And when we landed the crew in Simonstown, Admiral Sykes met them at the top of the gangway. And it's the only time that I'd seen a naval officer, a high-ranking naval officer, really lose his wool with the commanding officer of this, or the captain of this ship. We then escorted all
the
crew.
What did he say and do?
Well, I just forget now. It was a very surprising action he took, anyway. But they were all saved anyway, all the crew. She sank afterwards, like, you know.
You're not very happy to spell out what happened?
No, not really. It was unbecoming of a naval officer.
Why did they want extra people aboard this county class cruiser?
Well, a lot of the crew had gone on leave. When I say a lot, I think there must have been about 20 of us joined us from this camp at Simonstown where we were. Right? Mm. They're going around the. See, Simonstown's only got one main street, really. And they're going around with loud hail, looking for crews. Right? Mm. We didn't have to do very much aboard. All I was had a rifle and bayonet guarding the prisoners.
How did the prisoners behave?
Well, you know, very big headed and swanking and all that. Like, all the time, I got the job afterwards. They were sent up to a camp right at the top of the mountain called Clava Camp, it was called. And they seemed to have the best of everything, and we were having to watch them all the time. I think they were removed then from there to Weinberg, prison up there.
So, were they speaking to you in English?
We never even spoke to them, I know. But their attitude and all that was that they were going to wipe the floor with us, sort of thing, like the Germans wasn't. But we certainly never had any time for them, and vice versa, like, you know. That was the first contact, really, I had with Germans, like, you know.
Were these German Kriegsmarine or civilians?
These were naval people, like, you know.
German naval people.
And merchant service personnel, like, you know. They weren't civilians.
So who were the arrogant ones, the German Navy or the German merchantmen?
Well, I think it was both. You've got to remember it's 60 years ago now, isn't it?
But they gave the impression that they were going to easily win the war.
Oh, yes, without any doubt at all, like, you know.
Did you think they were going to easily win the war?
I'm afraid we weren't that intelligent at the time to know what was going on. It was very, very difficult, I've got to admit, like, you know.
And what kind of a ship was this Watusa?
It was a passenger ship, like, you know. Not a very big passenger ship, but I would say 20,000 tons, something like that.
Did they put up any resistance?
None at all, no.
How did you treat them? Did you give them a thump?
Well, no.